Welcome to Ojibwe Stories, Gaga Nunanada. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. Our guest is Laria Mick Smallwood, who grew up in Ajamud, the Lake Lena district of Mille Lacs. He has worked as a language instructor for the Minneapolis Public Schools, Neosheng School, Leech Lake Tribal College, and the University of Minnesota Duluth. Since 1999, he has served as the director of language and culture for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. Today, Larry talks about the significance of names and dreaming for Ojibwe communities. Joining our conversation today is Brian McGinnis of Nagakane Dasoyung, the Center for Indigenous Knowledge and Language Revitalization at the University of Minnesota Duluth. Today, Larry, I wanted to ask you a little bit about naming and the importance of getting a name. And we have a lot of young parents out there in Ojibwe country, and they said to you, you know, why is it important that my newborn get a name? How would you respond to that?
Well, to be recognized by the Creator and the all the spirits, to know that we call upon every day and that watch over us, it's important for us to have a name. You know, a long time ago, they used to name their babies within 4 days, which was good. But see, a long time ago, everybody was in the same community, in the same village. They had all their spiritual people right there in the same village, everybody that you needed for these things. Now, with people working in different areas, different cities, different towns, and that, and with the language being gone, these people are getting hard to find. People that can do the namings, and your medicine men and your healers and all that, everybody's living far away. But a long time ago, everybody was right there in the village. They made sure that it was done within that 4 days. And now they do it when they can, the parents. And you know, a lot of times our young parents in their 20s and 30s and 40s don't know this, the importance of this. They weren't raised that way. But the kids that are growing up now are realizing somehow that they need a name, and they're seeking out people to give them names. Mm-hmm. I just did a naming for two girls yesterday. They were high school girls, and they grew up knowing nothing about this. And their grandfather, being traditional, decided he would set it up so they could get names, so they did. It's important, you know, when you put your sema down to ask for help, that you have your name. It's like when you don't have a name, you have a sea of people out there, and you put a sema down, you know, Manadu looks down to see a people, and it says, somebody down there needs some help. But when you have a name, and you say your name, and you need help, they zero in on you, know right who you are, and right what your problem is, and you get help that way. So it's very important to get a name. It's never too late. I've named people in their 50s. And, you know, even a gentleman talked to me about getting a name, and he's older than I am. And I said, sure, it's never too late. You need that name also when you leave this world and go into the next world. You need your Anishinaabe name. So it's really important to do that and get that taken care of while you can.
When somebody comes to you and asks you to do a naming ceremony and they don't have any kind of knowledge about how it's supposed to go and whatnot, what do you tell them as far as selecting namesakes? Is there a standard number? Because I see, you know, there's a lot of difference of opinion in our communities about that.
Yeah, there are different ways in different communities. In our local area there, we usually have feast for the real young, for the infants and for the toddlers. We usually have feast for those grown-ups. They just come on their own, and you do a ceremony for them. You know, all they bring is their sema and their offering, and you can sit down with that individual and smoke your pipe and talk about one of your visions or one of your dreams or whatever has happened to you and get a name for that individual. So there's a lot more work to doing it with young people and infants than it is to do with an adult, but the meaning's all the same.
I wonder, too, if you could talk a little bit about the relationship between namesakes and maybe even a little bit about how that relates back to language and how that's reflected in the terms that we use for that relationship.
A person getting a name from a name giver, there's a bond there. It's a real spiritual thing, real heavy thing. You're taking that individual that came to see you to get a name, you're taking that individual kind of as a, I want to say, a, a son or a daughter, almost. Mm-hmm. Somebody that person can come and see when they have questions or problems or whatever. You are supposed to be able to advise that person.
You know, the term I hear a lot, that it's kind of similar to, like, in the Christian way, godparents. Do you think that's true? Or?
In a way, but it's more meaningful, more spiritual. Mm-hmm. It is, with your namesake. You stick up for that person you who you're named after or who gave you that name. You two have a bond. You stick up for each other out in public, especially if I named you, for example, and I saw you messing up out there somewhere, you know, and somebody started talking about you, bad about you. Hey, I said, don't talk about my wang over there, you know. I would stick up for you. Mm-hmm. But later on, I would get you off to the side somewhere and say, look, why, you should not have done that. You know, I want you to look at what you did, you know. But not out in public, I wouldn't correct you. I'd stick up for you. And always greet your wans. Mm-hmm. I have many wans right now. I don't know over half of them anymore. I mean, I started naming like 15 years ago, 14 years ago, and I named young people and infants and all that, and now they're all 15 years old, 16, and some of the ones that were 10 are now 20, 25, and mm-hmm. they have to come and tell me who they are. But, you know, I always, whenever I offer tobacco, when I offer a sema at a big drum ceremony, especially, I always mention my wans, Akina Niyoye, the Shuwi and Dagwazuge, you know, I pray for all my wans. Mm-hmm. And some people might not understand that, you know. And so why is he hanging around so special with that young man there? Or why is that young lady always going to see him? Or, you know, that's his way, mm-hmm. you know. And they should be comfortable around you.
So the other thing I wanted to ask you about with that is if you could elaborate a little more on that term, you know, Ojibwe, wah-ah, you know, what's the meaning of that? What's kind of the background of it? And how does that relate to some of the things, the relationships that you're talking about?
That I've never studied. I've never mm-hmm. checked into what the actual meaning Niyawe'en. Mm-hmm. Niyo. I'm sure it's got something to do with that. Niyawe'en. But I've never really checking it out and what it really means.
But it's mutual, correct? So, like, if you name me, we both call each other that, correct?
Right. Honey Niyawe'en. You know, a gentleman that named me when I was like 6 months old, he was a healer, and he was a name giver, and he was all these things. So he named me when I was 6 months old, and we used to go and see him off and on, you know, as I was growing up. Well, until the time I was maybe 12, and then I went about and did my thing, grew up and everything. And then when I was in my 30s, I heard that old man was in a nursing home, been in a nursing home for many years. So I stopped in that nursing home one day, and I asked the desk people where I could find him. And they said, oh, he's right down the hall in room so and such and such. So I went in there, and there was this old man laying there. Man, he was a handsome old man. And all I did was say, Anin. And he looked up, sat up in bed, and looked at me. He said, oh, Niyawe, Amek. I said, Hoa. He knew me after all those years. So, he never forgot me.
Hmm. You know, you mentioned that before, kind of remembering all these people. Is that something that you have to work at? And also, because our communities have changed, is it that, like, when you were growing up, more people did naming?
Yeah, when I was growing up, a lot of people had the ability to do namings because a lot of people, well, you know, of course, they spoke Ojibwe all the time, and when they got dreams and messages, they understood them. Our young people today don't understand the language, don't understand the dreams they have, and that's why a lot of it's being lost. But like I said earlier, there were a lot of medicine men, a lot of healers, a lot of name givers, just in one community, and they would help each other. Now you got to go 60 miles over here or 100 miles over here, you know, to find somebody that's able to do that. And a lot of it has to do with the loss of the language.
And when you say healers, I wonder if you could elaborate on what that means for some of the younger people or some of the non-native listeners.
Those healers we call Ngu, Nananda Wewe, and Nuwag. They are the ones that were given the gift to heal somebody with their medicines and the powers that were given by the spirits. There are not too many of them left today, or they're not too many at all today. I suppose if I went way up in a bush somewhere, maybe I could find a few, you know, but down here, they're not really that many anymore. Mm-hmm. Because number one, the first thing you have to do, you have to, and I talked about this on another show, I think, you have to be able to speak the language well to explain to the individual that you're doctoring where you got that authority to doctor. You got to explain all that in Ojibwe.
And does it work the other way, too, that if you receive instructions, it's in Ojibwe, right?
Right. And the biggest excuse I hear is, oh, the spirits talk to me in English. Okay, you can tell me that, but I never had a spirit talk to me in English yet. So, But see, people were given a lot of different gifts by fasting a long time ago. I mean, some were given the gift to heal. Some were given the gift to know medicines, to be name givers, all these things. And some people possessed all these gifts, you know. And it was through the dreams. And that's how they knew these things. And they were able to interpret their dreams. Some of our healers were shown the tools they needed to heal. Everyone was just a little bit different. So.
Yeah, it seems to be one of those things that was important for young people to be encouraged to remember those dreams, what was significant about them, to pay attention to them. And would you say, Amik, that as something that has changed in communities today, you know, that role of Bwajigewin, Gishpin,
a lot of people have told me that though. I had this dream and they were talking to Jubei, but I didn't know what they were saying. If you dream and you don't understand what they're saying to you, they will not share their gifts. They will look for somebody else. And I heard that about 25, 30 years ago. And there are some dreams I have, not that many. I'm able to understand them when they say something to me. And if I ask to dream something, I don't get to dream. I say, okay, it was meant to be.
Do you think, I mean, is that kind of a skill set that we should foster as Ojibwe people? Because, I mean, I have a lot of dreams and they're just, you know, mundane stuff. I got to pay this bill tomorrow, so I have that dream. But then other times I do, you know, have these dreams that are significant and, you know, I try really hard to remember. And then if it's something that seems like I need to ask about, then I really try hard to then, you know, talk to somebody about it. Is that something that we should kind of work on? Or?
Well, it all begins with the language. Mm-hmm. You have to know the language to understand, and that's your beginning. If you can understand the language, you would understand your dreams, what they're about. Then I remember a long time ago too, the old one would say, don't talk about your dreams, don't tell anybody. And you know, I was always taught not to ask why, you know. And everybody wants to ask why. I wish I would have went ahead and asked why on a lot of these things. Then I'd know why.
Do you think that's more true today, that people really want this explanation for things?
It needs to be put out there. Mm-hmm. But like I say, everything starts in the language. You have to know your language.
With reference to dreams themselves, were there a couple different words you would hear when people would talk about dreams? I know sometimes we hear people say Onabendum or Bwajigewin. What did those mean different things to you growing up? Those kinds of dreams or way of seeing in a dream?
Onabendum is what he saw. Onabendung. Bwajigewin is just dreaming. Dreaming. Bwajigun is someone that you dream about or you dreamed of. Some people have more than one. Bwajigunuk, the spirits I dream about. Some people say, and we do Kagan, and we do Kawajig, my helpers. There's different ways to explain that.
Yeah, it seems like a good thing. And one of the things that as we work with young people today in community settings, and or young people who are, say, coming to an institution like this, who might have grown up without the language, grown up without spiritual teachings, and not that that's anything we can give them in a place like this, but it's one of the things we can do is to make them aware that these things are important and to pay attention to their dreams. And, you know, we get young people here who are just, you know, 18, 19, becoming young adults, and so much is open to them still. So to encourage them to pick up their language, you know, Jimajio Jibwemo Tadiwad, to talk together, to remember those dreams. Of course, we don't ask them what they are. You know, you know, we would never ask that, but just that they remember. Remember what you saw. To remember that as they go on in their life, that seems to be an important thing to do. So, but definitely, it's good to see our young people interested in these things. But of course, our challenge becomes, how do we work in a good way to make sure they do that, that they have the opportunity to do that. And sometimes, it's like you said, Amik, finding the right people to help them, especially with their names.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow, that's a... So many young people tell us that. We want to know our names. Wow.
And you know, one of the things that these individuals that get named, they always know the English translation. What is your name? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know what it, but it means this. So, well, I don't ask. I didn't ask you what it meant. What is your name? You know? And a lot of times it's longer than their name, what they tell me. You know? And then also, too, translating somebody's name, they always ask me, can you translate my name? I can't translate that name, because that person, that name, that individual had his way of saying that name. Mm-hmm. I might say it wrong and tell them a different name. And I mean, there's more than one or two ways to say something. So I don't like to try to interpret somebody's name.
This is Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunanada, a program of Ojibwe culture. Our guest today is Larry Amik Smallwood, a language instructor at the University of Minnesota Duluth. He is also the director of language and culture for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe and is a contributing voice to the Ojibwe People's Dictionary, an online resource created by the University of Minnesota.
What happens as an adult, then, for someone who's interested in learning their Indian name? What's a good way for someone to go about receiving that or finding that? We certainly know you don't just make those up or look in a book and translate. I want to be called a long-legged eagle, you know. There's ways that those have to come. Any thoughts on that for people today who might not have had names as children, but as an adult understand, hey, this is important, and
They just have to go and seek out a name giver, and you know, there's a few out there. They don't advertise. It's not easy doing these things. It keeps you busy. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to put in your work day, and then somebody wants to go and wants to have a feast at night at 6 or something, and then you got to end your work day, and you got to rush off and go do this at 6 or 7. And sometimes your weekends are taken up, your weeknights, with a lot of different things. But see, the people that are gifted to do these things, they don't like to say no. They shouldn't say no. They can't say no sometimes. It's so hard on these people. I know traveling 114 miles one way to do a naming ceremony, and traveling back 114 miles is 228 miles. And the person wanted a name, gave the name giver a pack of cigarettes and $10. People are getting named. They should think about the importance of their name. Mm-hmm. I remember people going to ceremonies and going to see healers and medicine men and name givers, and they would put a couple of blankets there, maybe a hunting knife, a hatchet, tobacco, a couple of pair of socks. Something that's their offering. They thought highly of these things that they were seeking out, whether it be names or talking doctoring or healing or whatever, or getting medicine. They don't do that anymore. And the honest people don't charge. I mean, you can't go to somebody and say, hey, can you do a naming ceremony sometime? I live over in somewhere 100 miles, and you come on over. You give that guy tobacco when he goes over there. The guy can't say, I need $100 to travel that far first. That's not the way it works. You know, I know I've helped at funerals where we've gone over 100 miles, 200 miles and do funerals, and the people have given like $50 and, you know, that's all they had. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, usually the guy doing the funeral has a couple of helpers. Well, there's 2 days gone there, three people, and, you know, for $50 and gas is high. You should know that person came from a long ways. And of course, you realize a lot of people don't have much. And that's why we don't say no.
Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I guess you're saying if people do have something, people should be generous with their
How important do you think this? Yeah. How important do you think medicine is when you go see a medicine man to get medicine that's going to help you live? Mm-hmm. Do you think of it as a pack of cigarettes and $20? Is that how important it is? You think more of that. Mm-hmm. You think more of your life than a pack of cigarettes and $20. I'm just saying like it is. I'm just saying it cut and dried. Mm-hmm. You know? And I'm not a medicine man or anything, so.
Well, no, I think that is important, especially, you know, in our communities, we still have a lot of people that are struggling, but we also have some people in our communities around here that are doing better, and, you know, right. I think that's an important point, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's easy to spend more on than that at Walmart, mm-hmm. You know, very simply. It's good that we just have that awareness of the dedication, the time that mm-hmm. people do spend to help out, and that that be recognized,
right.
That you value that, as you receive that back in life and healing and blessing and help.
So we get to PT now,
There was one more thing I wanted to ask you about. In the old days, they had that naming ceremony within 4 days, and that, you know, logistically, that's a lot harder these days. But is there anything that parents, and I guess I'm thinking in particular to fathers, should do that first 4 days with their newborn?
But all I can say is do it as quick as you can, as soon as you can, as soon as you're able to do it. A lot of times these people would go and seek out this person that's going to do it to their homes, and then the man would put them in there and do a ceremony. Now these people are told to come over to somebody's house and do a ceremony, you know.
So, is there a preference that you have, that you'd rather go to people's houses, or you'd rather host people, or is it just totally up to the situation?
If possible, I like to go to their house, then I can leave when I'm tired. I don't have to sit there and wait for them to leave. No, I'm just kidding.
these things are big events.
I'd just rather go over and take care of it.
I think in every community, you know, it's to the point where things have changed, and there's less people that do naming ceremonies now, and I think that's totally fair to...
Right. Telling a cousin of mine yesterday, if he was ever in a bind and somebody asked him to do a naming, you know, I told him how to do it if he wasn't given authority to actually name. And he knows a little of the language too. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen people that ask somebody for a name, and then the person that was asked to do the name, he would say, I haven't been given the right to name yet. Although I'm old, but what I'm going to do is let this young child use my name, and he'll be known as this, you know. Mm-hmm. And then that's what that kid is called.
It's interesting too, Mick. I don't know if that's one thing you've heard too in your community, but I know with some namers, I've heard them talk about doing that work for the people, and especially with young children, I've heard a few elders comment that it's easier often to find the name for a young, new child than it is for an older person sometimes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's just the newness of that spirit of that life, but I've often heard that from people too.
I don't know. I've heard some people say that we're given tobacco and by somebody and say, I want a name. Well, they'll take the tobacco. So, okay, let me dream first. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, 8 months and a year has gone by and this person hasn't had a dream yet. And that person wants that name bad. Mm-hmm. So I can think of one individual that really wanted a name, and the people she gave tobacco to and never came around after a year. And so I told her, I referred her to somebody else, and I took care of it right away, and she was happy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people already have had their dreams, and they already have the names. You know, if somebody just came up and said, could you name this child tomorrow? You know, I'd say, yes, I already have my dreams. Then I could do that, or somebody could do that. I named one of my wands, I named it a parking lot downtown Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. She wanted a name so bad, and there was something going on in the hospital, and she wanted the name really bad. And we were standing outside smoking, and I said, okay, I had my pipe with me, so I got my pipe, and I named her right outside of the hospital there. But like I say, different people are different, you have different ways, and I'm not doubting I'm not saying one way is the only way. You know, don't get me wrong, I'd be in trouble for saying something like that. Can only speak for myself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a good only way we can think about that, you know, for ourselves. Yeah, gigit to go zana gut, though sometimes, though.
That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank our guest, Larry Amick Smallwood, for sharing his stories with us. This is Ojibwe Stories, Gaga Nunidada. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. To listen again to past episodes of Ojibwe Stories, Gaga Nunidada, visit the KUMD website at kumd.org and click on Audio Archives. Ojibwe Stories, Gaga Nunidada is produced by KUMD and the Department of American Indian Studies at UMD, with funding provided in part by a strategic initiative grant from the Chancellor's Office of UMD, by Enege Kendaso Young, the Center for Indigenous Knowledge and Language Revitalization at UMD, and by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.